episode 193.
Because see that guy with a year of experience over there? You have 20 years of experience. That guy has 1 year. We need to get the maximum value out of that guy with 1 year of experience. And it's not by changing oil. He can do that wheel bearing job. We can grow him as a technician. And you, with your 20 years of experience, you do something that he can't do. And we all win from this.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results.
Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here, and welcome to Remarkable Results Radio, the automotive aftermarket's powerful resource of online, on-demand content, like Netflix for radio. And I'm with Kirk Richardson here in episode 193. Now, keep in mind, this episode is made possible through the sponsorship of Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus. For serious technical training and support, online, on-site, and on-demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageGurus.com. Hey, have you ever thought about the value the podcasts bring to you? I hope you benefit in really big ways. It's my driving force to link people that need knowledge and want to affirm their strategies in a way that is easy to digest in your day-to-day life. Now, one great way to participate is apps for your smartphone or tablet. Hey, the beauty of apps is that you can always restart where you left off. Even my YouTube videos, it remembers where you ended. So basically, you never miss a beat. Find my podcast app at the App Store on Apple or Android. Search for Remarkable Results Radio. Hey, a shout out to Dave Eastman, Johnny Wright, and John Francis for their new Facebook connections, and to Greg Piquet and Brian Smith for their new LinkedIn connections. Now meet Kirk Richardson, owner of South Street Auto Care in Rochester, Michigan. Now here's an interesting, energetic, focused, and committed entrepreneur who admits he spent years getting his butt kicked doing a lot of the wrong things on his way to remarkable results. Now, he did not have the entrepreneurial drive back then, but what trumped it was that he cared for people more than anything. That core philosophy of Kirk is people matter. Kirk shares many of his strategies and tactics on how he has grown his business over the years. Here's a few. He had Starbucks dates with his future wife, and that was the start of him building his business strategic plans and ideas. He worked hard to create a solid foundation with a strong culture, processes, pay plans, along with a quarterly core culture review with everyone in the company that helps modify and strengthen the team's behavior. And he even gets reviewed. Now, he's preparing to buy a new business that is unrelated to the service business, and he's very confident in his 12-person team, and he explains how he has made every one of them have an owner's perspective on the business. Great concepts, strategies, and tactics abound in this interview with Kirk Richardson. Now, here we go. Hey, a warm welcome to Kirk Richardson from South Street Auto Care. Hello, Kirk.
Hi, Carm. How you doing?
Hey, I'm great, man. Glad to have you on. You know, what impressed me when I spoke to you in our pre-call was you're 34 years old and you're ready to retire.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, we need to talk about this. But there was so much more to the story because
right.
I think it was about maybe 10 or so years ago, you were a tech and struggling to run a business?
Yeah. Yeah. I bought my first shop 10 years ago, roughly 10 years ago. And, you know, I grew up in my dad owned a shop where all they did was brakes and did very, very well through the 90s, early 2000s. And I thought I'll buy a shop and it'll be the same thing and we'll just do brakes. And then, you know, 2007, 2008, the climate, just the, you know, cars didn't need brakes every 30, 40,000 miles. People were leasing cars. And then, you know, 2008 happened, 2009 happened. And, you know, I'm in the Detroit metro area. And nothing, no area was hit harder, you know, during that collapse than the city of Detroit and the metro area. So, yeah, that was a rough go, and I had no idea what I was doing. And I thought we were just going to do brakes and do $500,000 a year in brakes like my dad used to do and make a good living. And that didn't work.
Okay, so Dad was the wise sage here because he really questioned a couple of the things that you were doing.
Yeah.
And one of them was, it just set me back so far. Tell us the story.
You know, when you're 24 and maybe even when you're 34, you know, you might think you're smarter than dad, and, you know, dad doesn't know a ton of things. And I get in there, I'm running the shop, and I've been there, I don't know how long I've been there, 3, 4, 5 months, whatever it was. And, you know, my dad would come in periodically, and he comes in, and, you know, he's thumbing through my invoices, and he says, son, you forgot the labor on this invoice. And I was like, oh, no, we're good. That one didn't need any labor. And he's like, well, what are you talking about? You did a brake job. I said, yeah. I charged him $250 for the pads and rotors. I didn't even, you know, I didn't need to put the labor on there. And he just, in my standard dad fashion, he, you know, said some very choice words about my, you know, my intelligence, and well-deserved. But I just thought, oh man, I'm buying the pads and I'm buying the rotors, and the cost of the parts is only like $80. $250 is plenty. I mean, that's how little I knew at 24 years old. I walked in and I thought you didn't charge labor.
Did dad take you through the math at all to talk about all the expenses that were going on inside the business?
So dad loves me dearly, but dad tended to stay away, because, you know, we were both very, very intense people.
So I've always believed that the older you get, the smarter your parents get. Does that mean something to you?
Absolutely. I mean, I can remember to this day, well, you know, I went to Michigan State University. I can remember literally calling my dad, and, you know, and I love my dad, right? None of these are bad stories. These are things I love my dad for, honestly. And calling my dad and just thanking him. And I don't know how old I was, 21, 22. And,
you know, parents wait for those days that they get some affirmation from their children as they get a little older to say, remember how tough you were with me when I was 16 and going out with that girl or that guy, and you were really trying to talk some sense into me? Well, thank you so much, mom or dad, for that.
Yeah. It was eye-opening going to college and seeing how just far behind. I mean, I'm looking at my peers thinking, you guys, there's going to be a rude awakening in life called no one cares about you the way you think that they care about you, and no one is interested in your success as you think they're going to be. You know, and my dad just always taught me that, right? Hard work. If you want something, right, that's up to you to go and get it. No one's interested in like handing it to you.
Okay, so all this great, if you will, school of hard knocks stuff.
Yeah.
When was the day, and tell me how many years ago, you took this major leap into running a business so that it could sustain itself, or if you will, that entrepreneurial spirit?
Yeah. Well, I bought my shop. I thought, you know, it was a little three-bay shop, corner of a, you know, pretty busy corner, wonderful community. And I thought, man, I'm just going to be that guy on the corner, like the good old days where people would just bring their car down because I was in the right location, and I was going to be nice to everybody, and I was going to help everybody, and everybody was going to be my friend. And 4 years of getting my face kicked in by these people, I realized they're probably not that interested in being my friend. And they're probably far more interested in like taking advantage of my generosity. And I changed. I mean, it just became it was a transformational point where we said, we're going to look at this business differently. I'm going to really focus on, I still want to help people, that doesn't go away. That's still a burning within me. I'm going to aim it at different people, right? I'm going to aim it at my employees. I'm going to aim it at the vendors. I'm going to aim it at all of the people that I come in contact with, including the customers, but I'm going to do it in a different way. I'm going to have to charge some more money. I'm going to have to get rid of some of the people that show up to my shop and just stick their hand out and say, help me. And I would do it prior. And it said, you know, and I just said, I can't do that anymore. And, you know, I lost some of those relationships, but I also was able to build a business and grow at that point.
Yeah, you were, if you will, weeding out. But you thought it was cool to have all those great friends that loved your generosity.
Everybody wanted to like come in and talk and hang out, and I loved that concept. That was awesome. I want to come in and hang out and make sure I'm as poor as they are, or, you know, make sure they wanted to make sure I was as poor as they are. And I was like, this is not working for me anymore.
But nothing's wrong with loving and caring for people.
Right.
You just turned it more into a different focus. And
100%.
And you said, hey, we're going to grow a business. We're going to make some money, and we're still going to love and care for people.
Yeah. Yeah. It was almost me probably being rebellious against my dad. Like, you know, if you want something in life, you work really hard and people aren't handing stuff out. Well, I was working my butt off, but I was like, I'm going to hand some stuff out. You know, as I'm sitting here thinking about it, I don't know, maybe there was some rebellion against my dad. But yeah, it didn't work. That I can tell you.
I'm talking with Jonathan Jacquelli, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. So, Jonathan, how does a service professional get the guru on the go van to their shop?
There's a couple ways. We do what we call cold calls, where we go around and just visit shops based on geographics. And there's also times where we team up with outside sales reps from other parts distributors and visit the shops on that basis.
So I love this. You pull into a shop on a cold call, they see the van, and they're probably excited to see you.
Yeah. I've had a couple shops where they've actually have already heard of the gurus via Facebook or social media. So when I show up, they've already been signed up and taken online classes, and now that the van's there, it's really easy to book a lunch and learn.
So you're really an extension of the Garage Guru training centers.
Yes, absolutely.
So you're all done with your lunch and learn. You spend 45 minutes to an hour. Probably that's all you can really get from a busy, busy shop. What are the technicians saying about your shop visit?
Oh, they love it. They thank me, you know, every second I'm walking out the door and just can't wait for me to come back again.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. So you said if you're going to work 60 or 80 hours a week, then you need to make money.
Yeah.
And so, and what I want to tell our listeners is that Kirk has very strong operation procedures, very strong strategic plan, very strong culture, and a sustainable pay plan that he knows he's going to be able to leave the business in this team's hands while you go out and do something else soon.
Yeah.
So I really am so excited to talk about, and what I'd like to find out is, was there a defining moment that you said, listen, I've gotta take this business and kick it up about 5 or 10 notches?
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I owned a little shop in Livonia, and, you know, we were doing, I mean, at the time I was doing 300 grand, whatever I was doing. And, you know, I mean, I started really looking at other shops. I started really looking at what other three base shops were doing as far as revenue and how they were treating their employees and the benefits that they were providing. And I said, we're going to do this differently. You know, and I just went wholeheartedly after, you know, working on my business, right? Not in it. I was still working in it. Let me be very clear. I was fixing cars and I was selling jobs and, you know, but I really said, you know what, I'm going to come in. And it was really the best time for me to fix cars was at like 6 a.m. because no one was there. So I'd come in at 6, I'd fix cars till 6. And this is like 2011, 2012. I met my wife at the time. I was dating her at the time, and we would have Starbucks dates. So I would leave work at 6, I'd go home, I'd take a shower, I'd meet her at Starbucks at 7, and I was in there writing marketing plans, operational procedures, checklists. I mean, we did this for months and months and months. And this is my wife and I talk about, you know, Starbucks dates all the time, because that was honestly probably where I built my business, you know, into what it is at this point. So.
Did you get those ideas from peers, from a coach, from a 20 group, from your college textbooks? Where did you get all this?
Everywhere. So in 2011, I believe, middle of 2011, I actually hired a consulting coach, Joe Marconi, who I love dearly, who, you know,
oh, yeah.
Right? He's awesome. And I knew probably all of the things to do because I read. So like literally sitting on my desk, like here's every copy of Ratchet and Wrench ever made, you know, ever known to man. I've read it from cover to cover.
Now, Joe's been on the show before.
Yeah,
too.
I love Joe. I didn't know that. So I read everything industry. And so I'm an accounting major from Michigan State. I never graduated. I left and started a business. But you know, I use that background. I read constantly anything and everything unrelated to the industry. So it was a culmination of all that and probably my upbringing. I mean, when I was, you know, in elementary school, my dad was handing me articles from Investor's Business Daily. It wasn't specific to the industry, and a lot of the stuff we do isn't specific to the industry.
So key to so many businesses today is a real strong culture. thank you, first of all, by sending me your culture, your strategic plan, your pay plan for your team, your daily sales goals, your operational requirements. Very good reading. Exciting stuff.
Good. I'm glad you're excited about it.
Yeah.
Us too.
Actually, I love to read that stuff because it really shows me where you're thinking. And it only, you know, when I heard you say, listen, I'm going to leave this business in these my 12 people's hands, and I'm going to go off and do this over here, I was excited for you.
Yeah.
And to me, it was a bold move as a young man.
Yeah.
Because that showed me entrepreneurial spirit. But you have to have a solid foundation there. If not, you know, you're going to lose your business in a short.
Yeah.
So I guess by you sending me this stuff and reading it, I don't have to affirm to you that, you know, you're on track. It just shows me, man, this guy's got something here. So tell me culture. I'm a big believer in culture. Is this one of your biggest and most important documents?
It's it. I mean, so that's like for culture, that's like the tip of the iceberg, right? I think I sent over to you our assessment tool. So we have the five core values, and we actually do, you know, and I think culture starts right from the top, right? The owner sets the tone on what the culture is going to be, you know, and there's a million ways to do that, but I think that starts there. But what I sent over to you, we have, you know, I bought a much larger shop a little bit over three years ago, and I walked in and I said, the culture here sucks, because it did. It just was terrible. And, you know, it was a pretty big shop, and I said, we're going to change this. We have two employees left from when I took over 3 years ago, and those two are awesome. We love them. But we walked in and I said,
culture separates it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We hired and fired exclusively on culture, you know, and we worked through it with a lot of guys. I mean, I had to fire guys that had, I had to fire two guys that had worked here 25 plus years. Culture is king. Like, culture is it.
So take me to a moment where you've used your culture in your assessment tool to bring a individual online and to get them to conform to the way you're running your business.
Yeah. So we took that assessment tool. We took the five core values, created, you know, what we call applied correctly. Like, here's the behaviors we want to see against these core values. And here's the behaviors where you could kind of overdo this or underdo this. And every 3 months, we sit down and do a core values review. And it is exclusively with every employee in the building. So we have 12 employees, 13 employees. I don't even know how many we have at this point. And we sit down with every single person in the building for 20 minutes, and we do a 20-minute assessment of their behavior over the last 3 months. It is life-altering for these guys, because they walk in, we hire new people, and it's culture shock for them, because we don't do flat rate, we don't do hourly, we do something completely different where it's a complete team environment. And it's an adjustment. These guys are like, whoa, 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 whoa. Why does this guy want to help me so much? Why is this guy interested in my success? Why is he like handing a break job to me so he can go and do a really difficult job? We do this every 3 months. And for everybody that hires in, that first 3 months, we sit down with them and they're like, this is weird. This is a strange deal you guys got going here. I love it, but it's a strange deal we're doing here. We're at a point now with everybody in the building where, you know, generally we do a core values review and they get a bonus if they score well enough. So they get a $500 bonus every quarter, $2,000 worth of money on the table to show up and not be an asshole, jerk, excuse me. You know, that's the term we use. Don't be an a-hole. At this point, pretty much everybody we've had multiple quarters now where everyone has gotten the money. It's time for us to modify behavior. It's a built-in period where we say, hey, here's a behavior we don't really like. It's laid back. It's informal. It's fun. We get to heap praise on everybody in the building because, you know, we got four core values where a guy's kicking butt. And then we say, hey, let's talk about doing the right thing. And when we say do the right thing, we really mean policies and procedures. And, you know, we'll get on them about it. We'll say, hey, we're kicking butt here, but we need you to get on board with the policies and procedures. You know, and we give them a couple examples and they say, you know what, you're right, I'll fix that. It's a wonderful space to modify behavior. And so many owners in this industry, they really, right? What's the thing they hate? Oh, technicians are so difficult to deal with. And, you know, my manager's in a bad spot because, you know, this guy's a lion in the shop. And I have zero lions. I just don't have any, A, because I won't deal with it. But B, right, our culture is so strong.
So it is difficult for people to adopt into a culture like this. Tell me, hire a new person. Is there obviously you can disrupt a culture by bringing on someone new.
Yep.
You're laughing because
they're all weird, man. They come in and they literally go, they come from this flat rate world, and we have a, you know, we have a work distribution system where the work is essentially out in front of all of the technicians. So they can see it. And then, you know, it's funny, they come in and they see a wheel bearing job and they're like, I want that wheel bearing job. And it's like, cool, man. Like, we'll get there. And that's not the one that we need right now. And, you know, they're so focused on that, where we've had technicians who are newer to this thing, they will distribute work out, right? One guy might look at a car and we might have someone else repair it. So we've had guys where they're newer, they keep the ticket. They sit on it. They'll stuff it in like their toolbox because they don't want to give it up. And it's like, whoa, like, you can't take the ticket, stuff it in your toolbox because you don't want to give it up. Because see that guy with a year of experience over there? You have 20 years of experience. That guy has 1 year. We need to get the maximum value out of that guy with 1 year of experience. And it's not by changing oil. He can do that wheel bearing job. We can grow him as a technician. And you, with your 20 years of experience, you do something that he can't do. And we all win from this. Right. So we've had the guy, it's abnormal to them. And we've brought people in who are butt kickers. I mean, just guys banging out work. And the group, right? The group, the company, the people that work here have came to me and the managers and said, that guy's got to go. I don't care how much work he produces. I don't care how much money he makes for us.
Yeah. I've heard of team fires. And in fact, I've been part of people coming to me back in my business life where, I'm representing these 10 people, and that person has to go because it's disruptive.
Yeah.
One of the things that I saw, and I can't remember where in all of the great stuff you sent me, was a service advisor says, hey, listen, this customer needs tires, but I'm not really that good at tires, but my peer service advisor is really good at tires.
Oh, yeah.
So I toss it off to that person because we know we've got a much better job of selling that solution to the customer.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's all, you're really creating an ultimate team.
Yeah. Yeah. For any shop out there who does the service advisors on his own individual pay plan, you are punishing your customer. Like, you're just punishing them, right? We have essentially two managers and two service advisors. The managers sell service, right? So we essentially have four service advisors. They all work together, right? They all do what they are good at. They all work with the customers that they have a good relationship with. So we have a customer that walks in the door and Brett is, you know, has had good relations with them, right? Like, we'll aim Brett right at that person, right? And all the other service advisors are like, that actually is what's best for the company and the customer. And they're happy to say, I know this person spends, let's send them to Brett. And, you know, they love Brett. Drake doesn't care, right? Drake wants the company to be successful because he's worried about our gross profit, which is our pay plan. So we got four guys that just want to make the customer happy. And they work together to do it.
Okay, we're going to talk about that pay plan in a little bit. But, you know, as far as culture, I just want to read these five core values: people, business, not the car fixing business.
Yeah.
Powerful, do the right thing. You mentioned that. Being great at what we do. Does that breed your training program?
Yeah.
Being good at what we do?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so we really talk about all the time. You chose to be a technician, right? I didn't choose that career for you. You as a technician, you as a person chose to be a technician. And unfortunately, or fortunately, however you look at it, part of being a technician is knowing that this is going to look different 20 years from now. And it looks now different than it did 20 years ago. This is a never-ending evolution, and you will constantly have to learn, right? That's set right from the top, right? I have gone to multiple technician trainings and I couldn't fix a car to save my life. I've gone to them with them. We had 13 people at, I don't know if you know who John Thornton is, but
sure do.
Trainer, love that guy, right? He was doing a class. We had all 13 people there. We had four service advisors, eight technicians, and an owner. I almost made the admin come, you know, because I'm like, this is institutional knowledge and we're all going, right? It shapes it. We had a rep in here yesterday and he's like, how do you get all of your technicians to come? And I'm like, it's expected. That's how.
It's part of your culture. The fourth point of your culture is egoless teamwork, and I think I'm hearing that from you.
Yeah.
Let's not get in the way of each other.
Yeah.
And then finally, results. And if the results weren't there, the pay wouldn't be there because that's how you pay your people.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff. Now, you sent me a daily sales goals report. Is this shared with everyone every day?
Every day. Every single person. So we have a little morning meeting at 7:55 before we open. Every single person's there, and we go over the numbers every single day.
Is there any discussion on recovery if the numbers aren't right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So on that sheet, I don't know if you picked up on there, there's a off on the right there, there's a thing called wage projection. So every single person in the building sees that in the morning and they say, we're, you know, I won't say numbers, but we're, you know, we're on pace to do X. I don't like X, right? We need to do X plus 10, right? And collectively, the collective group is far stronger than any one individual trying to drag the group, right?
Well, I see. Wait a minute. You're saying that if I knew what my percentage of gross profit is, I look down here,
yes,
and it basically says,
every day.
That's what my monthly bonus is going to be.
That's what your monthly pay is going to be, yeah.
I'm sorry. That's what my monthly pay is going to be based on where we're currently at.
So what you're looking at, to give you an idea, we've changed our pace by about 20 grand. In 3 days. So if you looked at that 3 days ago, the pace was under, you know, it was 20 grand less.
And it's about just working together as a team, putting people's strengths to work.
Absolutely. Constantly. I'm not a believer in, you know, short of my manager, right? I'm not a believer in trying to take someone's weakness and make them average at their weakness. They're weak at something for a reason. It's because they don't like it often. And they're good at things for a reason because they like them. You know, so I don't ever try and take people's weaknesses and turn them into their strengths. Let's amplify everyone's strength in the building, and everyone wins in that scenario, to me.
Operational requirements checklist, it really basically it ties right into everything you're doing.
Yeah, every day. So they have a day. So service advisors have a daily, they have a weekly, service manager has a daily and a weekly, operations manager has a daily and a weekly, and they turn them in and I review them.
Strategic plan, you know, and I was wondering if this was, you know, from Joe, it was a, you know, where did your thinking come from to create a strategic plan for the company?
So 3 years ago, a little bit, 2.5 years ago, because I bought the place like 3 years ago, a little bit less than 3 years ago, I hired a consultant, a local consultant, just to bounce some ideas off. I, you know, went from a 3-bay shop to essentially a 12-poise, 13-bay shop that I had bought. And I wanted someone to like kick ideas off and really hold me accountable. That was the best thing about hiring a consultant, was the accountability. And she brought in, you know, kind of that strategic plan in a different variation from what you're seeing now, but much the same. And I've kind of been using it since then. And that's something we involve. I have two L3 level technicians that are in their early 30s that are long-term guys that we're going to make happy for another 30 years until they retire. So every 3 months, we sit down and have a meeting and we go over the strategic plan. I take my two managers, my two, you know, leader, and we call them leader techs. We take the two leader techs and we go into a room for 4 or 5 hours and we work on that strategic plan.
Excellent. I was about ready to ask you that, if this was something that you put together, you at a Starbucks meeting, or was this an engagement from your team?
Absolutely. Yeah, we'd take them right off the shop floor and say, we're going to talk about our business.
So when you talk about core focus, our niche, mm-hmm. it says maintenance, diagnostics, and repair. Mm-hmm. Are those in the right order you want them to be in?
So when I bought the shop 3 years ago, the only thing we did was repair. It was just broken car city. We're moving towards the maintenance. We're not where I want to be on the maintenance, but we're moving towards it. The customer base I had purchased was not as friendly as I thought they were going to be. And it was a very, very steep learning curve in, you know, how to deal with them for the first 8 months, which was a whole different animal from my much smaller shop. It was culture shock for me, how demanding and just rude these people were. So
in the strategic plan, you've got the 1-year plan, the 3-month plan, and how often do you renew this?
You'll see on there, there's a thing called bricks, right? And we say, you know, bricks build houses and we're trying to build a house, right? So, everyone takes on you don't have to take on a brick, but everyone takes a brick on, right? So we have a technician right there. You'll see part of it is, you know, Euro training. Every week we have a weekly meeting with everybody in the shop. So every Thursday morning we gather at 7:15, everybody who works here is there, unless it's their day off. But we go over that. So that's something where we go around the room and we say, Adam, how are you doing on your brick? Are you on pace for your brick? And if he says yes, cool, we move on. If he says no, he's got about one sentence to explain why he's not.
Got it.
And that's it. And that's how we check in, and we do that stuff with productivity numbers and all sorts of things.
You know, that this has that absolute flavor of a major corporate America where the strategic plan has assignments to it, if you will, timelines and assignments of leaders within the company, and everyone in the company, no matter what position. So you were talking about the Euro program, and is Adam a tech?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And so Adam was charged with the responsibility of not only just working on cars and contributing to the overall success of the company, he's got to reach out and find some Euro training.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, so one of the cool things that this pay plan, so we're the number of technicians we have is a lot for the amount of work we do. Our technicians don't work a ton, right? So on average, every single technician in our building spent less than 43 hours on the shop floor last year. We didn't have one technician who spent more than 43 hours a week on the shop floor, right? So we have meetings. They have space. They always take their days off, right? They never work more than 5 days, right? That's pretty important to me. It's pretty important to them. They have time. You know, they have time to do these things. We're not down here making guys bang out 60 hours, you know, on the shop floor.
And this strategic plan is posted, does everyone have a copy of it in their?
So we have a conference room with a TV in it. And we have taken PowerPoints. We save them as movies, and it just scrolls on our TV constantly. You know, so it's just a constant loop. 5-year plan, 1-year plan, 3-month plan, bricks, issues and opportunities, and then we do a lot of cultural stuff with it. Right? There's pictures on there and things we've experienced and trips and.
So there's no escaping it.
No. There's zero getting away from it. So literally, like, I'll pick you up. That's right there. That's right next to me. There's our strategic plan.
Oh, I see it. Yeah. Great, great disciplines.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the other reviews, one of my favorite, the one where they said, stop talking to customers. I was like, man, I probably should assess how angry I am right now. But you know, my favorite review ever was they came back and said, if you need something done, Kirk is the guy you find. And I was like, yeah, that's all system related, right? That's all things that are in place to make sure I don't drop the ball on the 100 things I got going on. So yeah, that's for sure.
All right. The gross profit pay plan, without getting too deep in any of this, you have designed a program that says, hey, listen, you're going to earn a piece of the gross profit of the company. And you have basically shown everyone how that is calculated. Mm-hmm. You know, revenue minus cost of goods, less, you know, these defined expenses, if you will, leaves a number. Mm-hmm. They all have a certain rate of that final number based on their position and their job, and I'm sure their tenure. And
absolutely.
And the team is like, as you said a little earlier, people come on. People get hired into this program. How big of a culture shock is it?
It's enormous. I mean, they just don't know how to behave because everything they've done, right? I hire a technician that's been doing this for 15 years, and everything they've done is I fight the guy next to me. I don't care about this company. I don't care about the guy next to me, and I don't care about the customer. I got to make sure every car that comes in the door, you know, that I want, I get my hands on. And it's just so dramatically different here. It takes them 2 months to like learn how to like not, you know, like sandbag on the car they're working on to make sure they get the right ticket they want. And all of these cultural norms and flat rate environments and commission environments, they just don't know what to do. It's shocking. And it's so shocking to me because it's such a natural thing for me to say, let's just all do this together. But I guess I've never been in an environment where I had to fight someone else. So they just.
It's a dog eat dog world out there without something that absolutely relates to your culture. And I guess if you're building your culture and you say, I just love this, how do I get everyone on the same page? I guess we put a number up here called, you know, the net of gross profit or whatever you basically call it and say, we're all going to have a piece of that. Now, how often does your training or your meetings work toward all those, you know, the expense control and gross profit and revenue? Is your entire management training focus on how to improve all those elements?
So I have essentially like 12 shop owners working with me, and that's how they view it. I mean, these guys, I'm not exaggerating. We're in Michigan. It's cold. This winter, not so cold. Last winter, they didn't turn the heat on. I'm not exaggerating. They didn't turn the heat on until like after Christmas, because one of the things that is, you know, is factored into that gross profit number is the gas bill, the electricity bill, you know, things that they have some control over, office supplies, and they don't waste anything. We watched our shop supplies expenses once we implemented this like 2 years ago. We watched our shop supply expenses go down immediately. We watched gas and water go down immediately. We watched service advisors who normally would just click the buttons, you know, and say, I want to order here, or I want to order this, and this. They'd spend some time and do a little price shopping so we could get an extra $50 of GP. And it was just all a natural byproduct of, hey, you're going to get a portion of the gross profit. You better use your brain and think a little bit. Oh, yeah. But every meeting has a flavor of that for sure.
Now, you have nicely explained and done a great job talking about culture, systems, and pay plans. That's why you know you can buy another business and leave this, as you say, in 12 owners' hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I recruit hard. I've recruited multiple guys that work for me now. It took me over a year to get them in my building. And I went out and I said, my job is to find the best of the best. And I want the best of the best because I'm not interested in like holding hands. I'm not interested in like standing over people's shoulders. I went and got the best because I want them to go out and like do their thing. And I don't, you know, I'll do everything I can do to facilitate that. But man, this is your show. And I'm super excited for all of these guys because we've set some pretty high goals. We've accomplished some pretty high goals already. You know, we just keep pushing on that. And you know, I'm super excited about that. But that was all a product of going out and finding the most talented people that I could and making tough decisions on people where I say, man, you're a really nice person, but you're not, I got to get somebody more talented in the building.
What wakes you up at 2 a.m. in the morning?
Nothing. I lie. When I have an employee and we're having culture problem, right? That like probably doesn't wake me up. It keeps me from sleeping probably. Once I'm asleep, I'm asleep. But like that will, you know, and really because I just value culture so much and I refuse to let anybody destroy it. I refuse to let anybody like permeate in there and like start causing problems. It's not going to happen. So maybe that. Outside of that, not.
Is it ever too late to learn?
No. So I just know constantly. It's a never-ending thing. I've come from my father just never stopped learning. He never stopped working. He's 72 years old. He has all sorts of money, could retire, and he's out building four houses because he loves to build houses. He hasn't built the house in 30 years. So, you know, it's what he's doing. You never stop learning. You never stop growing.
Is trying and failure an important element of your leadership?
Yeah. Oh man, let's blow some stuff up. I don't say stuff, but you know, when I first bought this place, I inherited the most talented technician ever. I mean, the guy is just amazing, and everybody knows him. You know, thinks he's amazing, and he was on this. I'd walk in the building, and he'd like want to ask me stuff, and I'm like, Jim, you're 50 times smarter than me. Just go blow something up, man. Like, if it blows up, it blows up. I don't know. We'll buy a new PCM. I don't know. I don't care.
But the likelihood of it blowing up.
Zero.
Right.
The guy was brilliant. You know, and so I knew I was taking a pretty calculated risk there. But I'm into risk. And, you know, if you're not pushing on like the wall that says, you know, if you fail, this wall is going to crumble on you. I don't know. That's the way I want to live my life. So I'm generally pushing on the wall.
What are you the proudest of?
The people that I'm around. The people that I get to work with. That's it. Like I clean the bathroom for them. Like I clean our employee bathroom and like, I'm like super happy to do that because I love the people that work here and I love how hard they work. I love the way they care, you know? So I'm about to cry. So I just feel privileged that I get to work with them.
What's the future hold for this industry?
You know, I don't know. So Joe Hansen, who you know, Bill Nalu, who you know, I talk to these guys pretty regularly, and Joe's like always sending me articles about autonomous cars, and you know, I don't know. I don't concern myself with it a ton because you know, I'm 34. I look at it and I say, Are we going to be fixing combustion engine for the next 30 years? Yeah. Yeah, we're going to be, I got another good 30 years where I'm going to be fixing cars, much like we know it now, obviously with some advancements and some changes, but you know, 10 years from now, if they don't sell a combustion engine, we're still good. I got some cars out there that I can still fix and maintain. So, but I don't know. It's scary a little bit. It's a lot scary, actually, especially with, you know, in our industry, I feel like we're, I hate to say this, but we're sort of bottom feeders. Everything we have to do is reactionary. I can't go out and like make changes at a level where, you know, I'm not the guy having to react, which is a little frustrating for me, but yeah, it's scary, but I don't have the answer to that. There was a technician shortage. So that I know. So,
and I'm not going to ask you about that because we seem to cover it every time I do an interview.
Yeah. Well, I got a different take on it that most people don't like, because I think honestly, shops are so concerned about this technician shortage. And I'm like, you're not going to overcome that. Like, you go to a high school and talk to a high school counselor and say, cause I've talked to him, and say, why don't you tell people to, like, you know, work with their hands and go to trade school? Because that kid's parents would kill me if I told them to do that. Right. That's not changing anytime soon. And you know, why would someone want to come to this industry? If you talk to if a 18-year-old talks to a 30-year-old technician, what's he going to say? Place I work for, I don't know, I got to fight this guy, I got to fight that guy. And I'm just like, you know what? Cool. There's always going to be a technician shortage. I'm going to figure out ways to overcome that in my own four walls, right? I have loaner cars, right? We do concierge service. We do all sorts of customer convenience things where if I have to extend out 3, 4, 5 days, right? Fine. Right. And if I'm that busy, you get a loaner car, right? Like, we do all sorts of things to make sure the customers can still live their lives while I'm suffering through my technician shortage. You know, I just think if three of my technicians walked out the door tomorrow, I'll go buy 20 more loaner cars and I'll still do the same numbers. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. What you're really saying is there's no technician shortage at South Street Auto Care.
Yes, there is out in the world, but not here because I can't control how few people go into this industry. I'm just going to figure out how to overcome that within my four walls.
Well, thanks for sharing incredible, great wisdom, sage advice here based on, you know, where you're at in your world. Any great wisdom words that you live by every day?
Work your butt off. That's it. I you know what? I lie. This is the quote on my, I'm not a big quote guy, but this is the quote on my wallpaper right now. And it's from Steve Jobs. I modified it a little bit, but it's, being the richest man in the cemetery doesn't matter to me. Going to bed at night saying we're building something great, that's what matters to me. I don't know. Maybe those are my words of wisdom. It's the only quote I've ever like cared about. But you know, work really hard and care about people, and generally speaking, pretty good things will happen.
Kirk Richardson from South Street Auto Care, thanks for being on the show.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Hey, aftermarketers, thanks for joining us. Kirk sure works hard on his culture. Now, for an in-depth episode experience, don't miss additional bio notes on Kirk Richardson. On the show notes page for this episode, go to remarkableresults.biz/E193. Now, you know I love to hear from you. Any questions or comments, email me at carm@remarkableresults.com or head on over to the contact page on the website. Hey, don't forget to download the podcast app. It's free on the App Store in Apple or Android. Just search for Remarkable Results Radio and have every episode right at your fingertips. You know, you're an important reason I bring you this library of interviews, this powerhouse of content. I hope you are profiting from wisdom and insights found in each episode. Hey, it's favor time. Tell a friend about the podcast. Thanks for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.